When I first looked through the book written by my next guest, I actually asked my producer if this interview was even a good idea. The fact is, L. Benjamin Rolsky's The Rise and Fall of the Religious Left focuses relentlessly on the role of legendary television producer and interfaith activist Norman Lear in shaping American culture in the 70s and 80s and in contributing to limiting the success the religious left has had in the decades since. Having had the privilege of leading Interfaith Alliance for 15 years, a nonpartisan nonprofit which has worked closely since its founding in 1994 with Norman Lear's People for the American Way, I am defensive of both the motives and the achievements of a man I consider both an inspiration and a friend. But in the apocalyptic times we are living through, as confidence in the goodwill, patriotism, and even humanity of people we disagree with has all but disappeared, it's clear to a degree we failed. Those of us working for inclusivity, mutual respect, the rights of minorities, and the value of diversity in the name of religious values as well as secular values have been speaking to each other, while a very different vision of our nation and our culture has communicated far more effectively and broadly and become dominant. To learn what may have gone wrong and what we could do better, it only makes sense to hear from a critic of this movement, no matter how unpleasant the criticism. And so Dr. Rolsky is with us today. Dr. Rolsky, thank you so much for being a part of State of Belief Radio today.
Thank you very much for having me. That was a beautiful introduction and summary, so I can't wait to have a conversation with you.
Good. So what does it mean that Archie Bunker would absolutely, positively love President Donald Trump?
Yeah, that steps right into the heart of the sort of polarization you're talking about. I don't think it's an accident that if you look online or on social media, you see memes, you know, connecting Archie Bunker, someone like Archie Bunker, to someone like Donald Trump. I even wrote an op-ed for CNN Opinion arguing that we've seen a rise in that association. What many people don't know, I think, is that when On the Family premiered in the early 70s, you had, even though it was a satirical show and those who understood it as such were sort of in on the wink and the nod, you had people even at the time who were very supportive of someone like Archie. It wasn't just satire. It was seeing your uncle on TV. It was hearing your father, even though got bombastic and obviously somewhat troubling and offensive. Archie for President bumper stickers were made, T-shirts, any number of sort of pieces of political paraphernalia were made in an effort to bring attention to this type of individual, even though the idea was to point him out in a way that was productive, that was didactic, and ultimately not something that you wanted to be. So the fact that the two have come together in this way, you know, you're speaking of being, you know, critical, in some capacity, the issues that made someone like Bunker possible have really not gone away. If anything, they've been left to sort of fester and to, unfortunately, develop a level of resentment that I think has made a lot of public discourse and discussion very challenging today.
I really want to leverage your expertise for the benefit of the present moment. Do you see the limited success of what you brand the religious left more as a failure of message or a failure of the messaging?
Yeah, that's a wonderful distinction, too. I've written somewhat about this. I think, to me, it's more about the messaging than it is about the message. And so part of what I've tried to tease out, and my thoughts are still very much sort of ongoing and developing, is that, you know, if you go back to the 70s with the rise of televangelism, with the rise of, quote-unquote, the electronic church, I think a number of liberal progressive of individuals were taken aback by that, and I think they still are. If anything, the term electronic church is both a descriptive term. It describes something that's happening, but then there's also a bit of ridicule thrown into that idea as well, in the sense that the congregation doesn't have a usual meeting place. It's not institutional. It's, God forbid, virtual. It's a congregation that's spread across the country simultaneously. So I would never necessarily say that it has to do with the message. I think if it comes to questions of sexuality, immigration, systemic injustice, in many ways the progressive vision is one that I think is best. Unfortunately, a lot of that vision calls on the prophetic to make it happen, and I think that's where the rubber hits the road. To what extent are people willing to follow up that vision with prophetic action and sacrifice? So I've written about how it has been about messaging, and how, and my next book looks at how conservative consultants and operatives leverage direct mail to remake the country following Goldwater's defeat in the mid-60s, getting hold of mailing addresses and doing the work to make a constituency possible, something like the Christian Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I would certainly say that your question's a great one, and it has more to do with the messaging than it does to do with the actual message.
Good. Benjamin, how do you define the religious left? Who are the people in the religious left?
Sure. So to me, it's the religious left is a term that describes a certain movement or group of people. That's for sure. Bringing it into conversation with something like the Christian Right, terms or turns of phrase are also products of scholarly investigation. They're products of investigative journalism, political punditry, commentary. So the turn of phrase is really one. So I would define it in two ways. It's a phrase that describes certain groups of people. So you have Protestants, you have Catholics, you have Jewish individuals, obviously People for the American Way. Is a good example, I would say, of a religious left organization. It's interfaith. It's using media to some capacity. But then the religious left is also more inclusive. I think it would include the sort of proverbial, quote-unquote, nuns of the country, spiritual, but not necessarily religious. I think it's a fairly diverse group when it comes to race, class, gender. But then at the same time, I also want to draw attention to the fact that the term is largely one that's kind of invented. It's shorthand. It's created in order to describe something that's happening in front of us. So not unlike the Christian Right, which really came about as a term in the 1970s, religious left, you get really right around the same time. And so for me, it's a term that describes groups of people, but then it's also evidence of the fact that all of this is being studied, and we need turns of phrase to help us understand the complexity of different religious movements. And this is just one of those turns of phrase that we happen to use to try and study all of this.
With that definition in mind, so is there hope of bridging the gap between faith-driven progressives and conservatives in this country?
I think there is. I think that maybe the sort of attempts to this point haven't been entirely great. And so what led to my writing of the book was that a lot of scholars have talked about the rise of sort of conservatism, the rise of the Christian Right, the rise of conservative Christianity, especially white evangelicalism. And so I wanted to get at, well, how has the quote-unquote sort of other side addressed these issues? And I just happened upon Norman Lear as an example of that. And so I think he did a number of wonderful things in the sense of aspiring for bigger conversations, public conversations about healthcare, about, you know, he's 98 years old, but he's still emailing people on behalf of the post office. Mm-hmm. I know that he and I know a couple of historians who have some sort of visibility on social media, and I know he's been working behind the scenes, you know, trapped in his home because of the time that we live in. So I think there's still activism happening. I think there's just a great deal of, especially now, misunderstanding. And so in my book, I was attempting to show some of the ironies of interfaith organizing that Lear was trying to execute, but at the same time, you know, not necessarily being willing to include or engage someone like Jerry Falwell at the time. And Lear had his own biographical kind of reasons for that. So I do think it's possible. It does come back to what you asked earlier about messaging, about not assuming that the message will be understood for itself by the public. I think there has to be a better job of making the case that, say, when it comes to immigration, the message is the correct one in the sense that the biblical text speaks to the immigrant, the migrant, the least of these, the stranger. But I think you have to make that case a little bit more strongly. Just like the right has had to make cases for a very long time, I think the progressive left has assumed for some time that those messages will be understood largely on their own because they're sort of right, which is not wrong, obviously, but there needs to be some follow-up with that. So I think there is some potential. It's just going to take a little bit more work.
You write about the politics of spiritual liberalism. I'd like for you to talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, sure. So that was actually – so this book comes out of my dissertation, which I wrote at Drew, graduated in 2016. And so at first it was going to be the spiritual politics of religious liberalism, Norman Lear and that kind of broader connection. And so when academics talk about the religious left, the broader topic is really something called religious liberalism. And so you can do both. If you were to go to your library or go to the internet, you could certainly find texts on both topics. But the broader historical movement is religious liberalism. And that goes back even further, if you want to, in the 19th century, 18th century, back to sort of Common Sense by Thomas Paine or some of the writings of Emerson or of Thoreau or Whitman. So what I was trying to get at, the politics of spiritual liberalism, so in the sense of how does spiritual liberalism, religious liberalism, find its political voice in the public square? And so for many of us, you could go back to, say, the social gospel movement, if you'd like, and how there's more a focus on systemic challenges, inequality, poverty, things that are maybe a little bit more difficult to concretize, but still just as important to address. And so that's what I was trying to get at in this book, in the sense of what kind of vision of the public square does Lear offer through his programming and through his nonprofit activism. And for all of the sort of limitations of the term, civil religion is a decent one to use to describe what Lear was after and what Lear was trying to do with his programming and with his activism. So the politics of spiritual liberalism is, how does a progressive understand the public square and the relationship, in many ways, a custodial relationship to the public square and the public goods that you find within that space?
You recently authored what I think is an insightful article headlined "Focus on the Message: How the Religious Left Can Reclaim the Public Square." What's that message, and do you think there's a chance that's going to happen?
Yeah, so that's, I think in that piece, I think written for a center at the University of Virginia, and it's really stemming from your question about, you know, message and messaging. So for example, and you know, maybe I sort of said this already, but I think I used the example of immigration in the sense of how does a progressive vision of the country, how is it disseminated? You know, how is it made or how is it communicated to constituencies? How is it, is there a sort of unity of message or singularity of message? And to me, this is what I've learned from comparing, say, conservative organizing and progressive organizing, is that conservative organizing, there's usually a singular message from top to bottom. And most of the time that's either ridiculed or criticized for being, you know, somewhat simplistic or even authoritarian sometimes, so I wouldn't necessarily disagree with. But that's what I mean by focusing more on the message, that there needs to be something singular, something communicable to the American people. Conservatism has used the tools of marketing and advertising for a very long time, especially since the 70s, and I think progressive individuals have sort of watched from afar, fearing that they might violate some sort of principle of political engagement, when I think politics really need to be understood as they are, which is conflicts over power. We certainly want to be inclusive and include as many number of people as possible, but for many, politics is about the establishment of power. And so in that article, I say that if you want to obviously use the biblical message and the biblical text to defend and articulate an understanding of immigration and an ethics of the migrant, I think you just have to do that more intentionally. Instead of leaving that message to be understood by the American people, you have to make that clear in your communications And so going back to the 70s, conservatives have created any number of training manuals and different sorts of paperwork to help people understand how to be political and how to convey messages like that. And so for me, that's when you ask message and messaging, it's about how that's made clear and not just sort of assume that the American people will get it, sort of like with Archie Bunker. You know, that was received in two ways. You could be supportive or you could be critical. And so I think we just need to be a little bit more particular and specific with the messaging moving forward.
I think more and more of us are realizing how the conflicts in our nation are only going to get worse after November 3rd. From where you sit, what should all people of faith be preparing themselves for after the election?
Yeah, that's a very timely question. I mean, I think in this time, even though it's not at all what we first think of, I think regardless of what happens, as you've suggested, we've reached a bit of a fever pitch with a lot of this, and it certainly has a history to it, whatever the culture wars have or haven't been really since the 70s. It's in some ways produced the very moment that we're in. And so I would say for those people of faith, those part of different interfaith organizations, I suppose just a willingness, and this is going to be difficult, I suppose to hear, because it's just things are so against one another, is just to still try and listen, still try to understand where someone is coming from. I certainly don't want to be seen as condoning anything, but at the same time, if we go back in time and really ask, you know, why was Archie so bombastic? Why was he so upset or seemingly upset? Why was he so loud other than just for comedic purposes? And part of it was that a certain segment of the working class was experiencing a difficult time. Archie's paycheck was sort of shrinking. He was a number of any number of people who were becoming part of something called a silent majority. And obviously, I think we've seen that really morph and transform into something truly frightening on some levels. So I think a willingness to delve into that history, a willingness to be even more committed to the vision of a whatever that vision might be, of progressive sort of inclusivity and of understanding. But I know that at the same time, those can be very difficult things to achieve in such a sort of calamitous or apocalyptic moment. So obviously do what you need to do in order to make yourself heard, but then at the same time be willing, even if things seem dire and almost uncommunicative, to still leverage whatever patience you have to see if you can understand where someone else is coming from.
Good advice. Dr. L. Benjamin Raltsky's first book is titled The Rise and Fall of the Religious Left, Politics, Television, and Popular Culture in the 1970s and Beyond. Up next, he's working on an examination of the new Christian right across the 20th century. Benjamin, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much for having me. I had a great time.
Before we go, as uncomfortable as I am with anything that approaches self-promotion, this is a time when we need to call on as many resources as we can, even if that includes something one of us is personally working on. It was heartening to hear Senator Sherrod Brown draw a clear line between the lessons of history and the challenges of today in the hopeful way that he did earlier in the show. And because I was asked in my role as Pastor Emeritus here in Louisiana to present a series of lectures with a similar hopeful theme, I wanted you to know about them. The Thomas E. Strickland Lecture Series in Church History will be shared online. I'll be talking on the topic of religious freedom, our first freedom, Stories of Liberty. We'll post details on how to tune in at stateofbelief.com. Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.